my first problem, as usual, is the language. But I hope I will be understood if you are nice. And although I'm sure all of you speak Spanish, I should try to talk in this bad English. But am I right or not? Todos hablan español. Todos. No, I don't know, because probably it could be better if you speak Spanish or understand Spanish to talk to you in Spanish instead of English, isn't that? If I were Fidel Castro, I'd raise hands. And that. No, really. ¿Qué tú piensas? Okay. In English? Nothing can be done. Well, thank you. You are very. Thank you for your kind words for my presentation. But really, the word hero is something that makes me a little furious. Because I don't believe in heroes, believe me. I mean, my opinion about hero is so strange that I remember when in Miami, the first time I spoke with my friends recently arrived from Cuba, and I said that I am not a hero, and I prefer to be a simple human being than a hero. And because I think that a hero is a person with a basic deformation. And I prefer a man who is simply organized, a man who cuts the grass there, for example, or write a poem, or write everything you are reading here. Because if I would start this conversation about the role, as you said, of the writer in Cuba, I would say exactly this word written here: cosmopolitan and indifferent. These two words are terrible in our country and in Soviet Union where I have lived. To be a cosmopolite or to be indifferent. If you are cosmopolitan, it means that you are indifferent to the rest of the social commitment of your country. So the role of a writer in any communist society should be responsibility with that society. That's the first thing you must accept. And it is, it's good. I mean, I feel myself responsible for my family, my friends, and of course for my society. But in what way? And what is the role that we writer must play in a society like the Cuban society? First of all, because Cuba started a revolution without knowing exactly the goal of that revolution. This goal appeared with a year. And sometimes the official line of the country was this, and the official line of any writer was very different. We started, for example, I would assert freely our role in Cuba as writer and poet and artist. And we had a magazine which represented a very, very good thing in our past and, of course, very excitement times in our life. Lunes de Revolución. Because this magazine was distributed freely with the newspapers, the official organ or the official newspaper of the Cuban Revolution, Revolución. And at that time we were younger, of course, young, I would say. Many of us very young. And Carlos Franchi, who was the director of the newspaper, gave us the opportunity of publishing our work to that wide audience for the first time in the Cuban history. Never a literary magazine could be distributed in 250 copies every Monday. And so we did. At the beginning, we were not asked what we wanted to write or paint or to discuss in the pages of Lunes de Revolución. Guillermo Cabrera Infante was the director, the editor. And all the Cubans of my generation started, I would say, professionally to write in that magazine. But how long this magazine lasted? No more than 2 years. In 1961, we were invited to the Biblioteca Nacional, National Library of Cuba, to discuss the policy, the cultural policy of the revolution. We were surprised. I remember that. I remember that that year I was speaking all day long with a Russian poet, very young at that time, Yevtushenko, who was in Havana making the film Yakuba. And he was afraid of that meeting. And he told me that also. He said, I'm afraid of this conversation because why? Why this conversation is so with such importance and so suddenly? And I said, well, I don't know. Maybe there is a little film with problems and probably we will have a practical problems to discuss with our leaders. Okay, there was a that film existed. Was a little film, 15 minutes, made by two Cubans. One of these is a brother of Guillermo Cabrera Infante, who loves movies, and both love movies. Yeah? And El Instituto Cinematográfico ICAIC was at that time the bureaucratical center of everything concerning movies and any other intellectual development in the country, because they pretended to create a Ministry of Culture, the people who ruled at that time ICAIC. Of course, they never got it, because Alfredo Guevara never became a Minister of Culture, but he was Vice Minister at the end. Now he's in Paris. And that little film was accused of being a counter-revolutionary film. Why? Because that film, according to the attack made by the ICAIC, only represented a very partial view of cosmopolitan Havana, you see, and was indifferent to the struggle of the Cuban revolutionary people. And we were all responsible for that film, apparently. We ignore the real revolution. We were irresponsible. Well, we didn't die at that time. Nothing happened with us. But Fidel Castro decided to create the Union of Writers. I remember what Anton Arafat told that year. He said, they want to create a Union of Writers, but not to unite writers, but to separate them and to control them. The Union of Writers was created, and we all became member of that institution. What was our role at that time? Well, to discuss at that moment, for instance, always the speeches of the leaders. That's very normal in the socialist country, at least at the beginning of the Soviet Revolution, for instance. Always they discuss the speeches of the leader. We did it. We entered in little groups, to study Marxism, Leninism. Actually, what we did was to read an official text published by the Academia de Ciencias de la URSS. Nothing scientific at all. And then we were suggested to go to the country, for instance, and to see the life of the people and to write about that. That year, I remember it was at the very beginning of the revolution, the cooperativas, the campesinos, were created. And so I remember that Guillén and many others, well, Guillén is the president of the Union of Writers, but many other people who I never saw before came to the Union of Writers and said to us, well, we should write something about cooperativas. I remember that two or three books, two novels, nobody remembers these novels anymore, were written about this subject. And 7 months after, Fidel Castro decided that cooperativas was a very reactionary model for a revolutionary country, that what we really need was, how do you say that in English?
State Farm.
So, that novel, or that poem about that, was nothing. Was counter-revolutionary. I remember one, I don't want to mention the name of the person, because he finally left the country and he died. He was a good man in a way. And I remember that the point of view he eagerly approved in that novel is this exactly. We are not going to take the land from you, peasants, on the contrary. We want you to have your land and to work separately, but at the same time united, all of you, which is on the contrary of the final attitude of the government. I mean, to abolish the property and to rule the country in the same way Soviet and all Eastern democracies, they say, do. Nothing. Well, there are exceptions, for example, in Poland and many other places, but with great struggle to get it. So the role, as I told you before, is nothing. You cannot influence in the audience, because all the books you could write or you can submit to the Union of Writers should be approved by the Union of Writers. If you are a young writer, for example, you cannot publish your book in a publishing house, because these publishing houses are all official publishing houses. So you have to become a member of Brigada Hermanos Aiz. It means a literary group of young writers. There, older people read what you write, and they especially are very careful with your behavior, social behavior. That was the case, for example, of Reinaldo Arenas, who was one of the youngest, or he is one of the youngest Cuban writers, and indeed a very bright writer. Well, Reinaldo used to go to the country when it was necessary, to every Zafra del Pueblo, because he loved the country, he was born there. But Reinaldo was homosexual, for example. And so he only published one novel in Cuba at that time, when they didn't know it, Celestino antes del alba. And never before Reinaldo could publish a short story or anything. Well, sometimes a little article, a little piece, you know, trying to see what happened. if Reinaldo could modify his behavior, which means his very human existence. And he worked for the Union of Writers, for example, with my wife. They worked together in La Gaceta de Cuba. La Gaceta is a literary magazine of the Union of Writers. They worked there, but they couldn't publish. They couldn't sign what they wrote. And that was the situation for many years. And then the police appear in our life. This is the most important thing in any communist society. The state security, because all social organizations have 4 or 5 persons in charge of this responsibility to watch what you do, but openly, officially, and to ask you what they want to know about everything. If you have a friend from the United States or from France or so on, and they visit you, you are supposed to go to the Union of Writers and to say what that person said about Cuba, for instance, or about the literature of the country. And it is normally accepted because it is officially established there that a foreigner is potentially an enemy. And even if this foreigner is a good person and shows you a good intention, they say that is the way the enemy presents themselves. So there's nothing to do. For example, my personal experience. I had a friend, Hans Magnus Enzensberger. This man was always a man of the left, bright, intelligent. He's not only a poet, but he writes essays. He has been always committed to the very radical issues in his country. And he was my friend. And I translated the first collection he published in Spanish. And he came to Cuba. He was invited to the University of Havana, where he could never, never teach because he was suspicious. Why was he suspicious? Because in 1968, when the Soviet invasion to Czechoslovakia, Magnus was in Moscow waiting for the Cuban visa to come to Havana to start the regular course of the university. And I remember that he sent a letter to La Casa de las Americas, to Roberto Fernández Retamar, who was the director, I think he's still the director of La Revista Casa. And the letter was outspoken, sincere. Magnus was sad because of that invasion. And so my friend Roberto told me, you see, I have to send this letter to the Minister of Education. He must know the letter. Well, copy. I remember he wrote a copy to Yanuza, who at that time was the Minister of Culture, of everything at that time. Many, many ministers he had in hand. And, in Moscow, at that time was a Cuban poet, Suar Diaz, and he gave the visa to Magnus. It was a mistake, finally. Discovered that was a mistake, but he gave the Cuban visa and he came to Cuba. It was given to him a very beautiful apartment, and he was received by 3 or 4 professors of humanities, and immediately he was interviewed and he was interrogated. Can you say that? Strongly, isn't it? He's interrogated about his personal feelings on the socialist world. Magnus said what he thought, and he never was professor at the University of Havana. He wrote a letter to Yanuza saying, I have been waiting, and I have the impression that I have anything to do here. I remember that when he decided to come to Cuba at that time, he was appointed here in the United States a regular course in Massachusetts. And he sent an open letter to the New York Review of Books, renouncing to go to that university because of the Vietnam War. But that was not enough. The problem was Czechoslovakia. Magnus, if I mention Hans Magnus Enzensberger, it's because he's a great, for me, he's a great writer. He's a very good poet. And I think one of the best books I ever read in my life in the recent years is the one he has dedicated to Cuba, which is not a political book, it's not a book of essay, but it is a poem. It's a long poem, beautiful, passionate, and it was a way he could solve his personal relation with that past when, as he said in the poem, he was 10 years younger. 10 years naive, more naive, he said. But my life is included also in that poem. He mentioned me when we were walking around the street, where the atmosphere of a communist country is perfectly captured in that beautiful book, which of course has never been published in Cuba and will be never read in Cuba. In 1980, the role of the Cuban writer became more serious and tragic, because you have heard about the Mariel exodus, and most of the Cuban, or the majority of the Cuban writers, left the country. Many of them were allowed to do it, and many not. Many, for example, Reinaldo Arena got away from Cuba. They didn't permit Reinaldo to leave Cuba because there are still writers there who cannot leave the country in spite of the want to do it. And I have friends, I don't want to mention them, but they are living there and they don't publish anything. So who are the Cuban writers now in Cuba, now living in Cuba? Well, Nicolás Guillén, Miguel Barnett. Who more? Who? What else? Who else? 3, 4, 5. But I can give you a list of 50 writers, the most important writers, who are some in the States, some other in Spain. The new diaspora, you say? What new diaspora? I know perfectly that the Cuban issue is a very complicated issue for everybody. And if I am invited now here, it is because the Cuban Revolution meant and means many things for the students, intellectuals, workers, I don't know, everybody is interested in that challenge the Cuban offered to the world 22 years ago. But since then, we have the same person, the same group of people ruling the country. No possibility of discussion exists in Cuba. And because I wrote this book that you had in your hand a few minutes ago, and some of this poem were published in the Cuban magazines, and because I sent this book to the Union of Writers, and the book was awarded the prize of poetry, my life was very difficult, very, very difficult. You know all probably that I was in jail, and then I was sent to Las Villas, and then I was again moved to Havana, where I was under house arrest for 10 years without publishing, only translating And in my case was also a very good and great Cuban writer, Virgilio Piñera, who died recently, 3 or 4 years ago, of a heart attack. In the next issue of Linden Lane magazine, I'm publishing a chapter of a book I have written about the Cuba issue, let's say that, about Cuba, about my experience in these 24 years. And I reproduce there three letters written by Virgilio Piñera, and the shortest is handwriting, 5 days before he died. And I used to go every day to the department of translator of the Instituto del Libro, Arte y Literatura, where both Virgilio and me worked as translator. At the beginning, this department was placed in the same building where the rest of editor worked. But at the end, they didn't want us to be mixed with the editors. And this department was placed in a very clumsy and remote place of Havana, at the end of Belascoain. And there, anyway, we had a very warm place to talk and to discuss, and we were there, you know, making translation. And every day I had to give 5 pages of my translation of a socialist novel from Bulgaria, or from something. Also, I translated a romantic poet, the English romantic poet. Not all, everything was rubbish. Yeah, yeah, I should say that also. But Virgilio, every morning used to come to the this department, and he gave his, how do you say, cuartillas? Sheets? Cinco cuartillas every day. We had to give to the director, and I was sick for four days, and I couldn't go to the that department. And Virgilio was very nervous. I don't know why, and he sent me a little papelito, as he said, with a friend of mine who used to give in these days my work to the this department. And he said, aprovecho que Pepe irá a verte. Can you follow me? This aprovecho que Pepe irá a verte para escribirte este papelito, entre paréntesis, entre comillas. Hoy me he levantado melancólico, me siento desgarrado. Puedo decirte como Rambo, par délicatesse, j'ai perdu mon cœur, o ma vie. No me acuerdo bien si es ma vie o mon cœur. El verso de Rambo. Y entonces dice, en fin, que estoy a punto de echarme a llorar, Virgilio. And 4 days after he died, he was playing, ¿cómo se llama eso? Las cartas. Sí, pero it was a special one, he laughed. Okay. Es común, pero es un juego dentro de ese juego. Que, Oh my. Okay. I'm sorry. And there's another letter. At the very beginning of the revolution, when I was in Moscow as a correspondent for Prensa Latina and the newspaper Revolución. And at that time, Lunes de Revolución disappeared, and Paulo Armando Fernández was sent to London, Guillermo Cabrera to Bruselas, and I was offered two opportunities, to go to Mexico or London or Moscow. What I said, I want to go to Moscow as a correspondent, that's better. I want to know the route of my future. So I did. And I remember that all of us discussed before my trip to the Soviet Union the way I could inform them how was the role of the writer in that society and how was that society itself. And